That's how you know it's a good and safe and conservative deal. So that's what I like to look for, is my downside protection. I see all these deals and everyone knows the upside. And, you know, frankly, that's great and all. And if the upside is going to be created, you know, unanimously throughout, then everyone's going to benefit from it.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
All right. Welcome back to the Gentle Art of Crushing It podcast. My name's Randy Smith. I'll be your host today. And I am really excited to have a partner, Craig McGruther, with us today. Craig is the Director of Business Development for Lone Star Capital. They are one of Impact Equity's premier partners. We've done 4 deals with them. They're based in New York City, and they've got $500 million in assets under management. So, Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me today. And it's so great, obviously, to be here, to be on your platform, but obviously talk to such a valued partner of Lone Star Capital, because you've been basically entrenched with us with every single deal, it seems, at least in my tenure at Lone Star. So thank you so much for that, your partnership, and having me on today.
Outstanding. Well, hey, why don't we jump right in? Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your history, and maybe how you landed in your current role?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, that said, it's, you know, oftentimes life doesn't really throw you a linear path. I didn't really think I'd be, you know, doing what I'm doing currently. I came out of the womb, funny enough, wanting to sell homes and be a realtor. I got through that for just shy of a decade, about 7 years of selling, and sold over 100 homes in my tenure in the Bay Area, and then moved obviously to Phoenix and was selling homes here. And then one day I was getting beat up over a $500 dispute in a transaction. I called my good friend, Rob Beardsley, the founder and principal of Lone Star Capital, who also published his 2 incredible books about that. He said, it's funny, I just got beaten up over 50K. I'm like, okay, well, I want that problem. So that immediately sparked that thought that I want to have the bigger problems. I want to play a bigger game, something that's a little more scalable. So I kind of backfell into multifamily because, you know, in the summer of 2020, Rob came out to visit my roommate at the time. I kind of knew him slightly before, and then we just became, you know, the best of friends that summer. He came for 3 weeks, or we thought. He ended up staying for 3 months. We talked about real estate every single day. He saw me kind of build up my career on the residential side. And then we kind of talked about maybe at some point working together and scaling that up. And the inflection point hit, space came, and I jumped on it right away. So I kind of, as they say, manifested it. I was like, hey, we need a sales position open. Let me know. And then, of course, that opened up, and we transitioned into a full year of that. So over the 1.5 year mark, roughly, I would say, and no looking back there. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I think so many people have that route, I would say, with starting a single family and then kind of moving their way up, right? So a lot of people, I believe you mentioned it when you came on my show, how you started with buying, you know, single family homes. And then you learned about the lovely world of multifamily real estate, the scalability of it, the forced appreciation nature. And here we are now.
Are you interested in real estate investing, but don't know where to get started or think you don't have the time or money? Are you stuck in your W-2 because the golden handcuffs make it hard to walk away? If this sounds like you, check out impactequity.net and schedule some time to talk with the founder, Randy Smith. Randy went from massive income to leaving his W-2 through passive income, and he can help you do the same. www.impactequity.net.
Yeah, it's interesting. Most people are investing in single family and then start investing in multifamily.
Yes.
You actually were selling single family and then moving over to selling multifamily. So yeah, very
absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's funny. I thought I was always going to want to do that. I thought that was the best and the most proficient route. I own my home that I currently live in. I sold it to myself. I had a great agent, right, naturally. And one thing that I have noticed is that there's just never not an issue with the home. So I thought I wanted to own 5, 10, 20 homes. That would be my retirement income and portfolio. And I'd live there and, you know, look up in 30 years, everything's paid off and I'm living the good life. Well, that's still a very realistic and great option for many people. But what I learned very quickly is that it's hard to scale because homes really can eat so much cash flow. You get paid an incredible appreciation, but A, appreciation's not free. There's so much upkeep associated with the house. And it takes one CapEx expenditure to your house, whether it be like me, I moved in, the inspection report was clean, but of course, right away, you move into the house, all the issues are going to happen typically in the first couple of months. Sure enough, the pool pump needs to be replaced. So if I just made that a rental, right, that was a $3,000 expense. Well, that would likely eat up my free cash flow for the year. You invest in multifamily real estate, the CapEx is already baked into place, and there's a little bit more cash flow there that can fill up the void and not be, you know, an alligator property where it's, you know, an asset, not a liability. So of course, rich dad, poor dad will ingrain those thoughts. Homes can, you know, slightly, obviously if they're rental, they're a asset, but you know, on the front end, they kind of have the liability nature to them. So it's harder to scale, not as much free cash flow. So the multifamily space, in my experiences, as I've matured and been in the world more, realize it's just a more premier asset to be investing in and a lot more scalable and a lot more cash flow associated. So,
yeah, I love it. So yeah, it's interesting. I know when I was doing single family, just like you said, the appreciation play is where I made the money on the homes that I own.
Yes.
Cash flow was little to nothing. And it's interesting though, in multifamily, quite often, cash flow is generally very low, or has been at least over the last few years because of the appreciation. But we're starting to see some deals that are actually kicking off some pretty impressive cash flow, significantly higher than anything I've ever seen in single family. I'm curious your thoughts on that or what you're seeing.
Absolutely. You are 100% correct. And, you know, even scaling it back from when I just started to now, you know, obviously when the interest rates are super low, what's going to happen is that, you know, there has to be a yield associated, right? So when interest rates get really low, the yield, the cash flow on that deal will be compressed. Similarly, when rates get higher, the cash flow will increase as well. Now, naturally, you could put more cash down to boost up the cash flow, but usually people like to play with leverage. If you can get it, if the banks can give you money, typically speaking, people take it. Rates low, price is high, and you know the cash flow is lower. But now, and also on top of that too, you know, usually it trades off the treasuries and whatnot. When the treasuries were lower like that, it was just tough. But now there is a lot higher cash flow. Cap rates have expanded, and we're seeing deals at Lone Star that we're acquiring right now that are kind of going in with, you know, year one, pretty conservative 6.5% cash flow. But in that interest only period before it burns off, we're looking at deals that are getting to 8-9%, which is incredible. And the cash on cash for tentatively a 5-year hold period with pretty conservative rent increases, we're looking at, you know, 7-9% on the deals we're currently buying and, you know, 2024 vintage acquisitions, which is pretty incredible. So to your point, finally, there's yield there. And it gets me really excited because the way I look at money is I want to, you know, basically buy income. I want to buy my retirement. Well, it's a lot easier to do that when the deals are spitting out the cash flow like this, right? So the cash on cash return is pretty impeccable.
Yeah, absolutely. We used to be in a position where you might be getting distributions. If you're getting any distributions at all, and today, as you mentioned, we're seeing, you know, almost 6% year one. And there's one deal that we'll talk a little bit more about that's almost 9% in year two, which is unreal. So, well, let's kind of back up a little bit. You personally, are you also an investor in the multifamily space or in single family? Or are you? Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so
talk about that a little bit. What did your first passive deal look like?
Yeah, so the first deal I actually did, I bought my house, so I want to take care of the foundation. I got that done. And then I thought it would be really important, and I think this is generally for whatever you're selling, you must be buying it. You must be cooking what you're eating. So immediately I invested, you know, a very, very handsome part of my net worth into Lone Star Capital deals prior to me switching over. So I invested in Madison at Bear Creek and Park at Champion Forest. So I was an investor in both those deals, which have gone very nicely. I have gotten distributions in them still to this day. And of course, we navigated them into a very, very unique and cool PFC tax abatement structure, which just enhanced the investment and really been paying some cool dividends. So those deals have gone very well. And so I have my house, I have those investments. And then naturally, I invest in every single Lone Star deal. I always roll my feet back into it. It's very tax efficient, but also I look hopefully one day to look up and have a very great scoreboard of money working for me and have the optionality to not need to work. So
love it. So yeah. So let's talk if we can then a little bit about Lone Star. Obviously you met Rob, you liked Rob, you were excited about the opportunity, but Lone Star is unique in a lot of ways. I'm curious when you're talking with investors or presenting opportunities to investors, what is it that really differentiates you guys from everybody else that's out there? Cause there's, you know, as passive investor, I run into these 2-3 person teams that just happen to go to a conference and meet each other, and maybe they signed up for some mastermind or something like that. But yeah. Lone Star is a little bit different than that, right?
Yeah, I would definitely say, well, first off, we very much would take this seriously. So we, you know, with regards to communication, with regards to focus, transparency, and conservative underwriting, I think those are the things that really make us stand out. So conservative underwriting, Rob literally wrote the book on multifamily underwriting. So, you know, if you look at our numbers versus someone else, maybe there's a shinier deal with a higher IRR, but what makes up that IRR, right? So, you know, the numbers that you put in really impact what the deal will look like. So making sure that the numbers that you put in there are conservative, they're reasonable, and your assumptions are fair, that really makes a deal. You know, we might have a mid-teen IRR where someone else would underwrite the deal to be a 20 IRR, but that's because they're putting in different inputs. So I really do think that, you know, our cooking with the ingredients and the assumptions we put in are very accurate, and sometimes we handicap ourselves, but we know that future Lone Star sales will really appreciate the conservative nature of what we've done. When it comes to communication, I think we're first in class.
Actually, before we jump onto communication, can we dig into that assumption piece? Because that's something I talk Absolutely. A lot with investors about. We talk a lot on this show. So, you know, the underwriting is only as conservative as the numbers that you put in it, and garbage in, garbage out. So what makes like true conservative underwriting? Because everybody says they're conservative. So what is it?
Like, everyone.
Exactly. So how do you measure whether something's underwritten conservatively or not?
Absolutely. Well, first off, what's your going in cap rate? What is your exit cap rate going to be? Because let's say you buy a deal that right now at a 6 cap, right? And you're projecting to sell it at a, call it even flat 6 cap. Okay, well, then you might have a lower IRR. But that same person who buys a deal at a 6 cap and then is projecting to sell it at 4 cap, well, next thing you know, or a 5 cap, you're getting millions of dollars created there, basically, depending upon the deal size, on, you know, cap rate compression, which is not to say it's unrealistic, but it's, you know, wanting and hopeful. It's more of something that's out of your control versus in your control. So, you know, right there can really throw off the numbers depending upon the exit cap rates. That's number one. The most important component is your entrance caps, your exit cap. Next thing to look at.
I know in years past that used to be conservatively underwritten if you increased cap rate by 10 basis points per year. And it was a wild market a year ago. What are you seeing in the market today? Are you seeing folks leaving that just flat and that's considered conservative? Or, you know, all things are pointing to potentially flat interest rates and potentially even going down. So is it possible we're going to see cap rates start to compress again?
I definitely think that at some point, when, we don't know, but at some point within the next, I would say it's very conservative to say 3 years from now, cap rates will likely be lower than we are today. And I do think we will get compression depending upon the asset type. But what you are acquiring right now is very important to make sure that you're able to get that compression. Because if you're buying junkier stuff right now, let's say, you know, late 70s, early 80s, you may not get that compression. But if you're buying deals that are 90s, you know, maybe late 80s, 90s, or 2000s, then that will likely be the better product and, you know, more core areas to get the cap rate compression, right? So naturally that will, you know, go first. The more core stuff will, you know, appreciate. So that's, you know, not an unrealistic world to assume. I just want everyone to know that, you know, look at the downside protection, and if deal makes sense, exiting, you know, if you're getting, you know, a higher than a stock market S&P 500 annual return on the cash flow or roughly around that, and you get a little bit of a cap rate compression or exit even or maybe slightly increase and you're still getting a nice return, that's a, you know, it's a good and safe and conservative deal. So that's what I like to look for, is my downside protection. I see all these deals and everyone knows the upside, and, you know, frankly, that's great and all. And if the upside is going to be created, you know, unanimously throughout, then everyone's going to benefit from it. But if there's an event where it stays flat, well, what does my worst case scenario look like? You know, and also how long is this deal going to last? Who's to say in 5 years we're not, you know, there's not a black swan event, unfortunately, that occurs where, you know, you have to refinance it or the market's, you know, worse than it is currently. That could theoretically happen, right? So I want to know that, you know, obviously if there's debt associated, what's my debt term? And, you know, what would my worst case scenario look like? That's what I want to look at, not the best case scenario, because I think too often people do look at the best case scenario. And seeing it from my side, I want to make sure, okay, well, am I okay? Is there a reasonable path here to get a 10% return? if I can get 10%, that's still pretty good to me. Naturally, I want better. And I do think that I invest in deals to get a better return. But if I can just hit that, everything else is gravy. And that's really handicapping your numbers.
Love it. Love it. Great. Thank you for walking through that. It's such an important piece that for years and years, we were so blessed with the returns that we saw just by simply buying assets and sitting for a couple of years, we were creating amazing returns.
And that's not realistic.
Yeah. That's not. No. Now we actually have to work and you guys have to execute on business plans in order to drive, you know, hopefully comparable returns, but even half the returns would be amazing. So, all right. So we talked about underwriting and conservative underwriting, some of the assumptions. I think you mentioned the next piece was really kind of communications was something where you guys differentiate yourselves. So talk about that a little bit if you can.
Yeah, and real quick on top of the conservative underwriting, exit cap, something to hit on, but then also on top of that too, your rent growth assumptions and also your expense ratio as well. So making sure those are tied up and buttoned up are really important. If you see, you know, 4+% rent growth, kind of challenging considering everything else there. So if the deal can be, you know, 2%, 3%, it makes sense. That's awesome. So communication, as far as that goes, I'm always accessible. Rob's accessible. Dosh is accessible. So we are always available to speak with our people. You're speaking to a human, not an operator, not some email. You'll get hands-on white glove treatment throughout the process. And hopefully you can speak to that. I mean, you keep wanting to work with us. So that does say something about the relationship there. I like to think that our communication is as good as it gets in the business. Not to say that other people aren't really solid as well, but I don't know how much more we could probably do. And we actually had a really long delay that we're together as we were in bed for longer than we wanted to be on our most recent acquisition. Not Aspire in San Antonio, but on Beckley Highland and Meritage, where it was basically a 9-month delay. So sometimes we were updating people saying that there was no update, which is a little bit annoying and can be a little tiresome, but we felt it was important to make sure and to maintain trust and to know that we were working very diligently to, you know, reach the common goal together. And, you know, sometimes communication can be, hey, we have no update, but we were thinking about you. And that is important. It does go a long way. And, you know, because of that, basically every single investor stayed in that deal, despite the very, very delayed nature of the deal and the raise.
I think that is the measurement of good communication is when bad things happen, because bad things happen. When they do, are you still stepping up to the plate and sharing that information, even though those are uncomfortable conversations to have, uncomfortable emails to send because you know what's going to come back. But I think it's when things get difficult, communication becomes more and more important. And you guys have just been you've been fantastic with that. So that is.
Yeah. And with that said, I think it's more important to make a hard phone call, and you got to make the hard phone call and be, you know, be more eager to make the more difficult phone call versus telling them the great news that the deal closed or we got a very favorable refinance or, you know, the deal's about to sell at a great number. That's awesome. And we want to celebrate the wins, but making sure that we are being diligent when things are not in our favor and the wind's not blowing in our direction is frankly, in my opinion, way more important, because that's really what character is built. And, you know, to your point earlier about the market being so incredible before, you know, everyone was winning and it was kind of like, hey, well, if you just invest in the right market, you were going to get the best return because everything's going crazy with the interest rate environment. Now that things are more challenging, now that we actually have to work and hold the property probably 36 months, which is roughly 3 years, we really see who the true experts and operators are. So we're, you know, very excited for the opportunity at hand here to really, really level up and show everyone why we truly believe we're some of the best, if not the best in the business.
Love it. Love it. All right. So communication, underwriting, what else? What else kind of differentiates you guys?
Focus. Okay. So we are only in Texas. So we're only in Houston, where we have about $400 million of assets under management. We're expanding into Dallas. We bought our first deal last year there, of course. And then now we're under contract on our first deal in San Antonio, which we're working together on there as well. And we've got our vertical integrated processes. So we only want to be focused in the market experts right now, just in Texas, in those three markets. We probably will expand at some point. This is not anything that I'm not teasing anything here, but at some point it will be logical to be outside of Texas. Unfortunately, I don't know if we'll keep the name Lone Star Capital. If we're going to buy deals in Arizona or Tennessee with that name, I'm sure it'll be fine. But you know, our focus really makes us experts because, you know, with our presence there, we get the benefit of the doubt of not having to pay the highest price to acquire the deal and get awarded it. But also we know what a good deal will look like, and we can also, you know, put in very reasonable assumptions back to underwriting due to what our portfolio is looking like. Because so many times from an institutional equity perspective, what we actually get is very interesting. People are like, hey, how can you get your, why is your insurance number there? And why is your, you know, trailing 12, you know, looking like this, but your, you know, performance looking like X, you know, how can you reduce your, the cost by 33%? And I love saying this because it's an easy answer. It's because, well, we're basing this off of our portfolio. You know, we're doing a deal coming up in Houston that we're working through and getting the contract signed and whatnot. And that's an interesting deal because we have about 1,000 units in that sub pocket. So we feel very confident with our projections and numbers that, that, you know, the deal will hit Performa and that, you know, with our, you know, presence there, we'll be able to truly hit those numbers and actually save on costs. And that's a focus, you know, that's a focus product.
And so, and great points, definitely. I love the idea of focus. Nothing worse, I think, when you find people that have 10 different properties, but they're scattered across 8 different states. I don't know how you can possibly manage that.
It's apples to oranges.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the other benefits that you guys get by having such a concentrated focus from a geography standpoint is you're able to fully integrate. And we talk about this a lot, that it's really easy to say that I want fully integrated with property management, construction management, but you guys, and you've been able to see over the last year, like, what is the real benefit of being fully integrated? And what kind of advantage does that give you compared to folks that are using third-party property management?
So, unfortunately, property management can kind of seem like a business where it's a bit of a race to the bottom. How little can I do? Well, not getting fired so I can acquire more units and collect more fees, right? So unfortunately, that's typically what it is. And when the interests are not aligned, where is the motivation or incentive? So on our end, it's very important because real estate, as you mentioned earlier, is the problem business, okay? It's a problem business. Pipes are going to break. You know, fires occur in properties. All these things happen, right? So it's out of our control to a certain extent, but it's going to happen at some point. That's what you're signing up for, to manage, you know, 150 plus units in Houston. You know, there could be weather issues. If we're on that assignment and we are also the equity provider, we have to report quickly and take care of it as quickly as possible. So it's really for reporting and make sure that, you know, we're not making any money. It's basically a break-even endeavor. It was losing money for the longest time. Now that we've got more AUM, it's actually slightly profitable, but we're not taking in that profit. We're just putting right back into the business to make sure operations are going well. But the importance of it is a third party group may be slower to make a phone call if there's bad news, but on us, everything's aligned. We're trying to get these problems solved right away. If a tenant's having a problem or if there's, you know, issues with, you know, a structure or something like that, we can take care of it right away and have our white glove treatment on it. You know, we want to make sure that, you know, obviously the front end of the process is going well at the investment side, but then obviously the smooth nature of the management is also handled well accordingly. So it's beneficial because if you have someone else on it, they're just not going to care as much as, you know, some group that has upside associated with the deal. And our property management team does have upside associated with that, our EVP, which is very important. So everyone's interests are aligned. We all have skin in the game here, and you just don't get that with a lot of groups.
And I'm curious too, and I've not ever asked this question before, on the back end, when you sell these assets, if you're managing the assets, does a buyer that's coming in look at that as more of a challenge? Because I suspect you guys will step away from managing those assets, so they'll have to go find new property management. Is that even considered? Does that come into play? Is it a concern for people that are buying?
That's a great question. So I will say, yeah, we don't do any third-party assignments. So we've got over 3,000 units that are exclusively managed by Lone Star Capital, our team Radiance Living. So we don't, you know, stay with the property to collect any fees. It's only for our investors. It's only for our incredible partners like you, of course. The only way we get handicapped, per se, is that our numbers are a lot cleaner on what our T12 would be, which for those who don't know what a T12 is, it's a trailing 12, which when you go to sell a property, that needs to be sorted out. And someone needs to look at their numbers to make sure that they have the accurate cap rate and whatnot going in. But they might actually increase the numbers because they don't have the efficiencies that we do associated. So they may take that number up. So unfortunately, although, you know, our investors get a little more free cash flow, maybe on the exit, since we do such a lean and efficient job, they may not fully underwrite their deal like that. It's just on our end, we can get those benefits. So they may have to alter the numbers ever so slightly to make sure they hit their pro forma. Or maybe they'll just go off ours and, you know, hit with a tough call. Or maybe our numbers are too high and they can beat them. So more power to them if that's the case.
Got it. Good stuff. Well, let's talk about strategy. You guys have moved into this tax abatement space in the last couple of years, and it's almost like you guys are getting an unfair advantage because this is something most operators aren't doing, but you guys have the advantage of offering this on your deal. So what is tax abatement? How did you guys find it? Why do you guys get access and others don't? Like,
great questions. More. Well, yeah. A lot of the times when things are very confusing and convoluted and there's a lot of complexities, some people just don't want to deal with it. Fortunately, we obviously have Rob, who's the co-principal, but outside of Rob, we have the unsung hero of Lone Star Capital, one of the most brilliant people I've ever met in my life and I've gotten the pleasure to work with, which is Kent. Kent is the other principal who for over a decade was a senior tax attorney at MetLife, went to NYU Law. So either you have a lawyer on retainer that's helping you these things, or one is your principal. Fortunately, he's our principal, so we get the best eyes looking at this, which, you know, really helps us, you know, navigate these, you know, very, very tough and complex processes that most people just wouldn't even want to step into. So we fortunately have that. Not every group can do it as well because it takes a while to really have these relationships with the HHA, the Housing Housing Authority, the SOHA, San Antonio Housing Authority, SOHA. It takes a while to develop these relationships. So fortunately, Kent has been, you know, kind of pounding that pavement for the last, you know, 5 years, frankly, and they're really just manifesting itself now. And really the fruits of that labor is finally starting to pay off. So it takes a while to do it. And you also have to have a certain unit count and focus associated because they want to make sure that they're going to allot these tax payment deals, that they're using a partner that has a focus there, that will continue doing them, and that will be a good partner in that. And that's not just going to flip them for a quick little profit. They want to have long-term minded relationships with people. And they kind of identified us, and we've expressed to them that that's what we want. So it's just a mutually beneficial situation and fit that, frankly, not everyone wants to do. And the benefit, really, frankly, to the abatements, as you mentioned, is in a state like Texas, there's no income tax. Well, typically speaking, they're going to hit you on the sales tax or what? The property tax. So being able to limit that is really important because obviously the X factor everyone is dealing with is insurance costs being crazy. If you're in Florida or Texas, you know, in the coastal areas, it's a little expensive, and obviously the interest rates. So with that said, if we can solve for and eliminate or lower property taxes, well, then a lot more deals are going to make sense. So we've kind of identified that as a really great option and a strategy that just makes a lot of sense for us to pursue.
Love it. Love it. So by having the connections and the education and experience that Kent brings to the group, you guys have been able to really tackle this tax abatement space. And my understanding was you were able to bring a number of your existing assets into tax abatement programs last year, which kind of saved the day and boosted cash flows on those, where a lot of operators Absolutely. Were really, really stuck. So,
More than anything else in that, Randy, I want to hit on this, and I'm so happy you mentioned it, is that because you bought or one bought a bridge deal, fully grant deal in 2021 or 2022, they may or may not get capital call. Doesn't make you a bad operator. Doesn't make you, you know, a bad business person. It was just really weird timing with, you know, a very, very big perfect storm of things that could go wrong, essentially, especially with where, you know, rates have gone. No one saw rates go where they went as quickly as they did, as fiercely. But it happened. Fortunately, we're able to navigate our deals out of those structures into long-term debt, which is really just allowing us to look forward and not have to put out fires in the rearview mirror. And also, to your point, enhance cash flow and just create overall health to these properties. You know, we are very confident these deals do very well. They're distributing, you know, 14 of our 17 deals are distributing cash monthly. We've got 9 deals currently now in this, you know, tax payment like portfolio. So, you know, it's kind of our niche. We've got over half of them there, but it really has been a saving grace in a way to learn well in this process and not learn the hard way as much otherwise. Now, it was a lot of brain damage on Kent's end, I imagine, to, you know, navigate the refinances as well as handle Beckley Highland and Meritage last year. Fortunately, we lived to tell about it with a smile on our face and no bitter feeling.
Yep. And it was, it was a beautiful day when we saw final approval on all of those assets moving over and Beckley Highland as well. So,
yeah. And on my end, selfishly, as I said, I'm an investor in these deals too. They got flipped into the portfolio and program. So I was happy as a claim, you know, and that's the thing with Lone Star. Everyone does have skin in the game. We are cooking what we're eating. are eating what we're cooking, and making sure that we are, you know, really investing back in our deals. And that's how much belief that we have in the deals. And on my end, you know, I know what I want to do. As I said, I wanted to buy all these homes until I realized there was a better route, which is, you know, investing in multifamily real estate.
When, and you mentioned something here. You said 14 of the 17 are distributing.
Yes.
So the 14 are fantastic. Great news. Excited. As an investor, you love seeing those distributions. But talk to me about those three.
Yeah.
And how confident are you guys in what's going to happen with those? Like, if you get a notice that you're going to pause distributions, does that mean we're doomed and we're probably going to lose our capital? Or what are your thoughts?
Well, this is why your operator matters so much, which, Randy, of course, you know more than anyone else. How many times, and via email, via text, via call, via LinkedIn, via conference, does someone want to come up to you because you're so known in the space and want to have you raise for their deal? Probably at least five times a week, I have to imagine, because I'm seeing people pitch me deals to raise for their deals, and I'm not, you know, I'm an employee of Lone Star Capital. Like, sure, we're the sponsor. So if I'm getting pitched, I know sure as heck you are as well. So, you know, it's different, and it depends, because if we're pausing distributions with Kent and Rob as the brain trust of the firm, they're seeing around corners and they're seeing things early. So we're actually probably the first group that paused distributions well over a year ago, because we saw that these rates were going up and we'd rather be safe than sorry. And because of that, I think we've saved the day. On the three deals that we paused distributions on, we're actively pursuing several routes, option A, B, and C lined up. It's just a matter of what's going to fall and what's going to happen and how it's going to work while avoiding a capital call. So there'll be no cash and refinances on those deals, which is incredible. Now, will the returns be maybe as juicy as the projected returns? I'm going to venture to guess probably not, although, hey, nothing's said and done. But we're in a situation where what's the most important thing? It's capital preservation, and the capital is being preserved on these deals. We were not too levered, fortunately, at the moment. Did we choose probably a less than ideal debt structure? Of course, but we're not alone there. But we're living to fight and to learn, as I said, not the hardest way, but we're learning in real time about what we want to do even as things move forward.
Love it. Awesome. Well, thanks for walking through that. It's an uncomfortable conversation to have with investors. Yeah. I remember when I got my first notification that I was going to have pause distribution, and I didn't know what it meant. As a newer passive investor at the time, it was scary. I thought I was losing my money. But as I learned more and more, it is the right thing to do to preserve the initial capital or to preserve investor capital. And even though it's not comfortable to do, quite often it is the best thing, because it will allow you to get through the hard times and make it to 25 or make it to late 24 when hopefully we'll be able to take advantage of some of these. So
yeah. And I want to note real quick too, if you're in a situation where you have to make a capital call and you're an investor to meet it, a couple things to think about is, where is your equity actually going? Is it to solve for a long-term solution, or is it to make a couple of payments? Because if it's just to make a couple of payments, what the heck is to say that you're not going to be in that situation again and re-putting money into the property in 6 months when rents could or potentially or may inevitably soften slightly and occupancy goes down? So performance really hasn't been that bad yet, but I imagine 2024 will be a tough year. When it's the toughest time and toughest year, it's the best time to invest. So be positive there when we make new equity deployments. And be very wary if you're going to make a capital call, which a lot of people are going to be doing. If if you've invested in five syndications, likely one of them will be capital call. It's just the way, you know, the things have worked. But if that's the case, make sure that you're in there solving for a fixed rate solution or a long-term solution, not making a couple of payments, because the worst thing is to lose money once. That's bad. But the worst thing, is to lose money twice and to make a capital call. You know, invest $100,000, throw $20,000 in for, you know, making a couple of payments, only to find out that you didn't solve for it and you got to go back to that well. So if you're going to make the call, make sure you have a very fluid understanding of where your equity is actually going and how this will actually solve for the next couple of years.
Yep. Such a good point. Because really, a capital call can save the day and turn a bad investment into a decent investment. If the time horizon is long enough with the solution, as you mentioned, on the back end. So, really great point. And thank you for walking through that too, because those are the things that people aren't talking about, even though everybody's whispering about the capital calls and the pause distributions. So,
yeah. And it's scary. And investing in real estate, is the most fun thing in the world when it's going great. And it is also a hair pulling out experience. So everyone, you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad talks about this. Robert Kiyosaki, I really just ingratiated myself in that book over the break. And I love that book. I'm going to listen to that book at least once a year. I think every single month in January, December kind of time period, I'm going to listen to it. But every investor and anyone who's made investments has probably lost money at some point. It's part of the learning process. We hope to mitigate that as much as possible with working with better groups. But just know where the pitfalls could occur again. Please be smart on that. Be very wary about where your equity is going to go if you make that capital call again. And everyone learn about this. Some of these deals that have huge IRRs, there maybe is a reason for it. And usually the higher IRR, the higher the risk is. So make sure that you now realize that and analyze that. Sometimes investors and retail investors, you know, which is, you know, just a mom and pop, your investors or your retail investors can be a little bit blind to risk. So, you know, when you see a deal from Lone Star Capital and maybe it's not the highest IRR you've seen, you can take it to the bank that those are probably pretty fair and realistic assumptions realistic assumptions, and also could potentially outperform it, which is ultimately the goal, is to say it's going to be here and then over deliver.
Awesome. All right. Well, we're quickly approaching our timeline here that we have. So I definitely want to talk about this new asset that you've launched. Impact Equity is in partnership with it. But let's talk about Aspire. Markets, what's the business plan? Why are you excited about it? Why should an investor call you or I to talk about it even more?
Yes. Well, first off, just want to thank you so much for being such a great and key partner for Lone Star Capital in 2023. And, you know, we're just so excited that, you know, you work with us. If we had, and I tell this to Dasha and Rob, if we had 10 Randys, our life would be so much better, because all the referrals, all the love and support you've been able to provide, anytime, you know, we have a reference or if someone has questions, you're one of the first people I think about. So I just can't thank you enough there. So thank you so much for your partnership. Why we love the deal? Many reasons. It has, you know, the Lone Star flair of it. It is, you know, partially abated for property taxes, which is great. This deal is in San Antonio. For the record, this is a 506C, so we can talk about this openly, available for only accredited investors only. But with that said, going in rents, 941. Stabilized rents, 940. In a recessionary environment where rents could stay flat or soften for the next couple of years or so, maybe go up 2%, this deal makes sense regardless, because the business plan is not pushing rents. It's to do the hard leg work, which is put the property in the tax abatement program. Okay, check. It is to manage the property well. Okay, check. Occupancy is 94% on it currently. Historically, it's been 93%. We love that. On top of that, there's also approximately zero new construction or supply coming to market or anything planned in a 2 mile square radius. So we love that. The San Antonio market is just booming right now. It's a logical fit for us to be there. It's in a great corridor of the market. We're putting in about, I think it's $7,000 per unit for CapEx plan. But the bulk of the business plan comes in from getting the deal and the tax abatement. And then we actually are forecasting slight cap rate compression. Although I will say, I mean, the cap rate jumps off the screen, as I'm sure you saw, 7.4% cap rate with the abatement. And we're planning on exiting it at about 6.5%, which I don't know how many operators are projecting many deals with that return level at a 6.5% exit cap. And with, you know, putting in, you know, dropping rent day one, but we're able to achieve that on this deal. So it just feels like a very defensive strategy while getting offensive returns, if that makes sense.
I love it. Yeah. So there is tax abatement from day one. This thing cash flows very, very strong, very similar to some debt funds that I see actually from day one. Interesting that you guys are budgeting $7,200 per door. Mm-hmm. What do you guys do with $7,200 per door? Is that
great
basically
question.
A turn, or is that like a super turn? I don't know. You know?
Right. And you know, you want to get paid for your CapEx, right? So we're acquiring a deal in Houston where the other person that was selling the deal, their other sponsor, you should say, unfortunately put in $25,000 per door, which is way too high and impossible to get paid for. So that was a bad choice. $7,000 for this area with the incomes might seem high, but unfortunately CapEx came in, we had to increase it more. But part of the partnership with the housing authority to accommodate the structure is $5,000 per door needs to be put in roughly. So we're obviously achieving that above. There just are some issues with the seller because they are frankly distressed. So because of the distress, the property, you know, it's been occupied pretty well and they really turned it around recently, but there has been some deferred maintenance items that we are taking care of from an interior perspective. Some sheetrock, some units need to be replaced. But we're just bringing it up to slightly above standard in the area. So, you know, tenants will get a really great product. And then we obviously get the benefit of the abatement plus just the really solid returns. And then, yeah, the cash on cash is about, I think, 8.3% over the deal, which is impeccable. So you just love to see that. I mean, as you said, when we were seeing deals with 5% or 4% cash on cash, if they're making distributions. So seeing that yield there is just awesome. And we're getting, you know, about over 150 points, depending upon where debt comes in on positive spread, which is incredible.
Yeah. And I what I liked about this is like true workforce housing. It's in partnership with a nonprofit that is going to provide the tax abatement process for it. And, yes. You know, we've got to remember, though, these are not like stainless steel appliance, granite countertop type of homes. This is true blue collar living. And the goal there is to create safe, clean, affordable housing for the folks that are really that need the housing. So seeing average rent rates at 942 going to 940, I've never seen that on a pro forma before.
With good numbers too, right? Like how awesome is that?
Yeah, and it also, there's opportunity that you can spend more dollars on the renovation and potentially increase rents. So when you start looking about how conservative, we talked about this earlier, how conservatively underwritten this thing is, the upside could be humongous. We'll never guarantee or promise that, but there's a lot of room for growth there should the opportunity in the market support that in the future. So
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, we're thrilled by the opportunity. Cash and cash flow is great. And, you know, we want to make sure that in these next couple of years, it's very scary to be too bullish on your projections. You know, I want to look at a deal, as I said, you know, when I analyze this from my own investment dollars, but just from the acumen that I've and the knowledge I've kind of obtained, I want to make sure that the deal, if rents are basically breaking for the first couple of years, or maybe even the 5-year hold process don't look the most favorable, the deal will still make money. And the box is checked on this one for sure.
Very good. Well, yeah, before we jump into kind of the final questions for the podcast, is there anything else you'd like to share with the audience about your background, your future, what's going on with Lone Star, anything that we did not discuss here today?
No, I just really hope we continue to do more deals with you and you keep partnering with us on opportunities. Hopefully we've got multiple to come and we just really appreciate it. So yeah, and if you're looking to learn more about, you know, the strategy that we have and want to know more about, you know, the multifamily space, Rob and myself have a weekly show, the Capital Spotlight Podcast. And of course, we did our show together on the kind of the spinoff under the Lone Star Umbrella Podcast Fun Friday, which I have too. So if you're a real estate junkie like you and I, and you're looking for more content and looking to learn, hear more stories and, you know, the reason why people do what they do in this space and some insights, I recommend you looking at those two places if you're listening.
Awesome. Well, very good. Well, let's jump into kind of our final questions. I've got three questions I like to ask everybody. So I know you've mentioned Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So is there another book or another educational resource that you would suggest the newer passive investor spend some time with?
So I am actually thinking about this a lot. I've thought about this. I want to do 12 books every year, but one book every single month and the same book every month. So as I said, I'm going to designate, I believe, January as Rich Dad, Poor Dad month, December as Rich Dad, Poor Dad month. That'll be the book of the month there. I think you have to listen to that book because it is a paradigm shifting book. It is the most crucial book I think anyone could do if they want to learn about, you know, basically just sustaining success and self-sustaining and not having to work for someone your whole life. So I think if you truly apply Rich Dad Poor Dad to your life, it will be very challenging to not be successful. So I just think that I'm going to double down and harp on that book more and more. If you haven't read the Purple Book, if you haven't gotten that one, that should be your gospel and Bible and your homework. So please enrich yourself with that book and really immerse it and think about it.
And I would say for those of you that have spouses that maybe are not on board as much as you are with this type of investing, just simply having them read the book will be the best sales pitch in the world. And I've seen dozens of couples come together in the investing space by having the other spouse just read this book. So
I am laughing so much internally regarding that, because I just listened to that book and I made my girlfriend listen to it and her wheels were turning. She has some paradigm shifts. She's setting up a meeting with her mom to discuss a trust and how that's going to look and investing. So just to see how excited she got, it gave me just more inspiration regarding that. But to your point, it really actually is very true. And if you want to build something together, and if you're in a relationship with someone, or you know, looking to get married soon, you know, listen to that book. And if they're not on that wavelength and can't see why that's important, you maybe have some soul searching to do. So I don't want to break it up here. I want to bond people together, but making sure that you bond together via that book. So please listen to that book if you haven't done so.
Love it. Listen. Love it. Any other resources that you think would be beneficial for folks to dig into?
I also like, say what you want about the person, Grant Cardone, but Sell or Be Sold is a very good book. It is awesome. So I've heard some mixed reviews all across the board, not speculating there. But Sell or Be Sold is also an incredible, incredible book. So I would recommend that as well. I'm a salesperson naturally. You are too. So if you are in the industry, you should really take some time to listen or read that book, whatever medium you prefer.
It's like you're reading my bookshelf one by one here. I've got that one as well. Love the book. So, okay. Next one's kind of a fun one. If, let's see here. I'm not sure if you're a bucket list guy or not, but if you are, is there a recent bucket list item you've checked off your list or one you're hoping to in the near future?
I really want to go to Switzerland this summer. That's on my list. I love to travel. I like to play golf, hang out with friends. I like to work. I don't have much of a life. It's funny. I'm 29 going on 30 years soon, and I'm very structured and disciplined in what I like to do. But when I like to splurge, it is to travel. So Switzerland, I hope to go on that trip this summer. So hopefully around 4th of July when it's miserable in Arizona, which you know, the best time to leave, and I'm sure everything will be fresh and perfect there. So also it's a little bit easier to go away that time of year due to the fact that things are a little bit slower like we experienced these last couple of weeks for the holidays. So Switzerland is high on.
Awesome. And what's your favorite destination to date so far?
My favorite city to visit is actually Amsterdam. So I've been there three or four times. I just love this city. I don't know why. I think everything is so walkable and feels so homey. The architecture is really special. The canals going through is something else. I have some lineage from that kind of part of the world as well. If you couldn't tell. So I really love Amsterdam. That's probably like the, hey, when I make it and I'm like rich dad and I have all my assets working for me and that column stacked up and I've got all this excess cash, hopefully 1 month every summer I'll be able to live there.
I love it. My wife and I are actually going to Germany in the fall, but we're going to fly to Amsterdam first and then over to Germany. So
maybe I can give you some recommendations.
Definitely. I'll follow up for sure. All right. And then the final question here, if you were given $100,000 that you had to invest in the next 30 days and you couldn't invest it in your current deal or any of the Lone Star deals, where would you put that capital?
I love this question so much. I don't know if you listen to my phone calls with my friends, because we just play these silly scenarios. Like, okay, if you got $500K, what would you do? Go, right? So $100,000 right now, couldn't invest in a Lone Star deal. I think I'd actually go into potentially a debt fund or hard money fund because 10 grand with 100 grand at 10% return, that's 10K. Roughly about $800 coming in a month. I would probably go there just for the immediacy, or I would take it the other route. So that'd be option, probably 1B. 1A would be probably to, since I am a licensed realtor in Arizona, max out some leverage, put me basically $0 down on something, buy a property, and then also kind of just fix it up if I couldn't invest in Lone Star. So it'd either be buying a house in Arizona, and doing a little value add nature to it, forcing some appreciation, refining it, taking out the PMI, or maybe turning it into a rental, depending on how much value I add to it, or putting it into a hard money fund if I couldn't obviously invest in an incredible loss of capital deal.
Love it. Love it. So I just happen to know somebody who's going to be launching a debt fund in the next couple of weeks or so. So we can reconnect after that if interested. Well, very good. Well, Craig, it's been really fun having you on the show. It's been great getting to know you over the last year or so and working with you and the team at Lone Star. Really enjoyed our conversation today. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for being such a valued partner and just a resource for us. And I know every time I get to work with you, it really just, top notch. So to everyone who is Randy's investors, whatnot, he's the best. So keep working with him, throwing more equity, and hopefully via that into our deals.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, thank you again. And to the listeners, as always, thank you so much for joining us today. Both Craig and I encourage you to continue that education journey in passive investing. But more important than that, we encourage you to take the leap and make the decision to invest in that first passive investment deal, whether it's with Craig or I or somebody else. We're confident that once you do, you'll be so glad that you did and just wish that you had started sooner. So again, thanks for joining us today. Be sure to come back and join us next Thursday for another great episode, and have a fantastic week. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.